Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
Now, news just coming in relation to the search for the missing Titan submersible. In a major update, the US Coast Guard has said a debris field was discovered within the search area by a remotely operated vehicle near the Titanic wreck. It said experts within are evaluating the information. Earlier, the Coast Guard said the search and rescue operation was still active, and it confirmed the French deep-sea robot Victor 6000 has been deployed. Meanwhile, the Canadian vessel Horizon Arctic has also been deployed, its own ROV that is on the seafloor. The US Coast Guard will give a news briefing on the search and rescue operation for Titan at 3 p.m. local time, which is around 8 p.m. Irish time. We will be returning to this story and bring you any updates as we get them before the end of the programme. Now, as we heard earlier in the programme, there were protests at the opening of the government's consultative forum on international security at University College Cork this morning, with Tánaiste the Micheál Martin shouted down by protesters with an anti-NATO banner during his opening remarks. The Tánaiste responded by saying they were trying to shut down debate. For more on this, we're joined here in studio by British Ambassador to Ireland, Paul Johnston, and you're very welcome, Ambassador, to the programme, and thank you for coming back into us again. Before we get on to the issues at hand today, I would like to get your reaction to that news just coming in from the US Coast Guard, because I know there are two British citizens understood to be on board the submersible, and the RAF and the Royal Navy are assisting with delivering the rescue equipment. But that news of debris does not sound good.
Good afternoon, Sarah. Nice to be with you again. No, it doesn't sound good. We have, as you say, a British submariner who's embedded with the American Coast Guard's rescue operation effort. We're also providing an RAF transport aircraft to help with the search as well. And the Foreign Office is providing consular assistance to the families of the three British nationals who are missing. And that doesn't sound like good news. So our thoughts and prayers remain with everyone involved in this very difficult situation.
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, we will keep obviously a close eye on developments and bring news to our listeners as we hear it. Now, Ambassador, I know you're here to speak to us this evening about the Ukraine Recovery Conference that's taking place in London this week. But before we get to that, I wonder, what did you make of those scenes this morning? Government said it's stifling debate in terms of those protesters at the opening of that consultative forum. Don't people have a right to protest, though, and share their views and concerns?
I think there's ways of sharing views and concerns, and I think the decision to hold this consultative forum clearly came from the best of impulses to have an open, inclusive debate on some very important issues. And I think there are ways of registering your views, and I think trying to shout down the Tánaiste as he tried to make his opening speech just felt to me like a rather immature and unnecessary way of seeking attention. I think there are better ways to do that.
I suppose maybe that's what people do, though, when they feel they're being silenced or if their views are not being represented, because there have been concerns raised about the makeup of the speaking panels at this forum, and particularly by President Michael D. Higgins in last weekend's Business Post. He highlighted the composition of the panels, saying they include the admirals, the generals, the Air Force, the rest of it, as well as the formerly neutral countries who are now joining NATO, and others within the Dáil, suggesting that there's a 5-to-1 ratio in favour of militarisation on the speaking panels.
Well, I'm not going to comment on the President's comments, and I'm not going to comment on Irish domestic politics, but it looked to me, looking through the lineup of speakers, that you had a lot of expertise there on a range of issues. And I think it's also important to understand that the security policy question, which I've worked on for over 30 years from the conflict in Bosnia through NATO and UN summits and EU treaties, is a very complicated one. And I think some of the debate in this country on the Twitter sphere and elsewhere has been frankly a bit binary and even a bit puerile. And I think actually it comes to something if one of the more sophisticated contributions comes from a Jesuit priest in the Irish Times who said more sensible things about NATO than many others have. So I think looking at the lineup for the panel, there's a lot of expertise in there. Because as the Tánaiste said, you know, the security policy debate is not a binary debate about NATO versus neutrality. There's cybersecurity, energy security, health security, food security, as well as the many dimensions of economic and military security. And I'm sure the debate and what flows from it will be a broader understanding of that, and hopefully some genuine reflection rather than some rather binary discussions.
And just to be clear, you're not referring to the president's remarks when you talk about binary and puerile comments.
No, in fact, if you listen carefully, I prefaced my answer by saying I wasn't going to comment on the president's remarks.
Okay, so is it much of what he has said is what is being reflected in the Twitter sphere, as you call it?
Well, I think the Twitter sphere has some comments that are very profound and thoughtful, and has some comments that descend almost to the level of abuse. So you find the good and the bad of everything in social media. And I think everyone is entitled to their view as long as they're expressed sort of respectfully and honestly.
And speaking of social media, you yourself tweeted today that had it not been for NATO operations, young soldiers risking their lives, many people in the former Yugoslavia and Afghanistan would not be alive today. You said, contrast that with Russia killing adults and kidnapping children in the Ukraine-Russian war. Now, many people wouldn't agree with that perspective on those NATO operations. You accept that?
Of course I accept that. But, you know, I worked myself on the NATO operations as a policymaker, not as a soldier, in Bosnia, in Kosovo and in Afghanistan. And when NATO intervened in Kosovo, it was to stop the ethnic cleansing of ethnic Albanians. And if NATO hadn't done that, the map of that part of Europe, ethnically and politically, would look very different today. As a negotiator, I worked on the UN's responsibility to protect, the concept that the international community had an obligation to take action to stop human rights abuses happening within countries if they reached a sufficient scale. Now, that's not being lived out in practice, but it's an important normative advance.
Was that the reason, though, for NATO going into Afghanistan? I mean, you're talking about lives being saved. I saw an AP News article just recently talking about 47,000 Afghan civilians being killed in that war.
Yes, but think of how many people would have died at the hands of the Taliban had NATO not tried to support.
We don't know, do we?
Of course we don't know, but that's not a reason to do anything. Ignorance is no defence.
But what was the reason then, in your view, for going into Afghanistan? Was it not to support a war of terror, an ideological war, as opposed to spreading democracy?
It was done in order to prevent Afghanistan continuing to be a safe haven for the terrorists who attacked the free world on 9/11 and who would have continued to attack the free world elsewhere. No one would pretend that everything that happened alongside the international intervention in Afghanistan went perfectly. But I think one sees the downside of where Afghanistan is today, because it wasn't possible to sustain that intervention. Mm. And one can imagine how bad Afghanistan would have been.
It was a badly thought out intervention, wasn't it? There was no plan going in.
There was a plan going in, but ultimately that plan did not succeed in the way that the international community wanted. But yeah. I think if you draw the lessons from that, you should just wash your hands of any attempt to correct wrongs in the world. Then I think that's a rather depressing state of affairs.
Sure, I do understand. It's just when you say that, think of the many lives that would have been saved and you mention Afghanistan, then you think of the 2019 report in The Guardian, which said that Afghan forces and their international allies, that's NATO, killed more civilians in the first half of 2019 than the Taliban.
Well, I'm not going to go into individual statistics, but I think if you look across the range of what NATO and the broader international coalition tried to do in Afghanistan from the autumn of 2001 onwards, it was trying to protect the lives of women and children and the innocent and the vulnerable in that country. Doesn't mean they got everything right, but I think that they were doing it from the best of intentions.
I want to ask you, as I mentioned, about the Ukraine Recovery Conference that's being hosted by the British government in London this week. Thomas the Micheál Martin attended that. Can you talk us through what was the purpose of that and how important do you see it as Ireland's involvement as a neutral country?
It's very important to have Ireland as a country that is making a huge commitment to the international effort on Ukraine, not least bringing in and welcoming, I think, something like 90,000 displaced persons from Ukraine. Also, it's shown great moral leadership and practical leadership in terms of helping fashion the EU's sanctions policy, worked out in coordination with my country and with others as well, which is applying pressure on Russia. What we're looking to do through the Ukraine Recovery Conference is really build international confidence in Ukraine and in the country's recovery and its long-term economic future. We've, I think, generated something like $60 billion of investment. The UK is now giving almost £5 billion of non-military aid. We've provided new guarantees worth, I think, £3 billion to unlock World Bank funding. So the purpose of this, while we're focusing on the urgent and immediate needs in Ukraine is to look to the medium-term future and guarantee the international investment that will be needed to support Ukraine as it eventually recovers from this conflict of which it's been the innocent victim.
And I know that you said in your letter in yesterday's Irish Times about this conference, you said no man is an island and no country should be indifferent to the fate of another. Of course, that feeds back into where we started with the debate going on in Cork this evening about international security in Ireland. Do you think it's inevitable that countries like Ireland, while not joining NATO, the Taoiseach has said that's not the plan, will need to work in closer partnership with agencies like NATO and the EU in terms of security?
I think that's completely up to Ireland. It's been a member of the Partnership for Peace, the sort of NATO partnership framework, for a long time. I think it's planning to join a PFP project looking at the very relevant international security issue, economic and wider security issue of undersea cables. It's up to Ireland as well. And the Taoiseach just spoke today about not being squeamish about PESCO, the Permanent Structured Cooperation within the European Union, which allows subsets of nations to work together on particular issues. So, as I said in my Business Post article at the weekend, it's a completely sovereign issue for Ireland when and how and whether it takes part in these groupings. But I think it's an increasingly complex and contested world. And I think international institutions and more informal groupings are highly necessary and relevant to the task of promoting shared security.
All right. Ambassador Paul Johnston, thank you as always for joining us in Drive Time.
Thanks so much.